mashed potato, do the candy yam, do the funky turkey, cause it's time to jam. If you don't wanna dance, baby, that's all right. Do some non-stop shopping to work up an appetite. Make your Thanksgiving one long meal, cause the more you eat, the more grateful you are gonna feel.
Vayehi miketz shenasayim yomim ufarao choleim vihine omeid al hayor. It happened at the end of 2 years to the day. Paro was dreaming that, behold, he was standing over the river. When, behold, out of the river there emerged seven cows of beautiful appearance and robust flesh, and they were grazing in the marshland. Then, behold, seven other cows emerged after them out of the river, of ugly appearance and gaunt flesh, and they stood next to the cows on the bank of the river.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. Excuse me. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this week's show is for Parshat Miketz, Shabbat Chanukah. Really going to be much more about Chanukah. And it happens also to be Thanksgiving and the first day of Chanukah, but we'll get there in a moment. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 25th day of Kislev, corresponding to the 28th day of November. Now, as I mentioned last week, and as I wrote in Torah Tidbits, and as zillions of other people have written, I've gotten a kick in the last couple of months of the numbers of people who have sent me forwarded emails with this business of thanks, guka, whatever they call it, givuka, and about the coincidence of the first day of Hanukkah with Thanksgiving. Not only is it a rare occurrence, it really is the only time it'll ever happen. The last time it would have happened was in 1861, which was 2 years before President Abraham Lincoln declared Thanksgiving to be the last Thursday of November, and then subsequently Theodore Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1941, I think it was, redid Thanksgiving to correspond to be the fourth Thursday in November. That made the 29th and 30th of November no longer possible to be Thanksgiving, and that made it less possible for the first day of Hanukkah to be on that same day. In other words, when Thanksgiving could have been as late as the 30th, there were more opportunities to have had a very early Hanukkah that coincided. But we're talking about a very early time for Hanukkah. We're talking about it has to be on Thursday if it's going to coincide with Thanksgiving, and it has to be in more recent times, since the 1940s, on the fourth Thursday, not the fifth. So you had situations like that, too. All of that, you've read, you've heard, been there, did it. But I want to give you my special twist on it, which I will do after we read Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121. Shir Lama Alot Esoinael Haharim Me'ayin Yavo Ezri Ezri Me'im Adonai Osei Shamayim Va'oretz Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha Al Yanum Shomerecha Hine Lo Yanum V'lo Yishan Shomer Yisrael Adonai Shomerecha Adonai Tzilecha Al Yad Yeminecha Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara l'yirvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, on this topic of Thanksgiving and Hanukkah, I have a lot to say, different from the mathematical calculations and the calendar exercise, but something which I believe is very significant. I grew up in the States, as you all know, and the one holiday on the calendar, the regular secular calendar, the national holiday, that Jews took to more than any other was Thanksgiving. Christmas is out. It's of Christian origin, and it doesn't matter how commercialized it became and how the religion was sucked out of it. It's still a Christian holiday, and it's based on a pagan holiday, and it's just, you know, not within the normal Jewish experience. Unfortunately, there are Jews who do mark it in some way, but forget that. That's out. Easter is out. Same thing, religious holiday, Catholic, Christian religious holiday. When it came to Thanksgiving, Halloween, originally a Christian holiday, and even though it's missing most of those elements or all of those elements in modern times, it's still too much associated with a Christian religion, and it's off limits to Jews who are on the verge of assimilation, or Jews who are not Torah observant, who might feel comfortable blending with the culture in the United States and even justifying it, that it has no religious significance today. I don't want to discuss that issue. I'm talking from my perspective, growing up in the kind of home and the community that I did, it was not even a havamina, as they say, not a first thought. When it came to Thanksgiving, some people actually observed it, and some people didn't. Observing it means family dinners, turkey, stuffing, pumpkin pie, whatever. The yeshivot, the Jewish schools that I went to, had off on Thanksgiving. And it wasn't focused, but it wasn't shunned either. I remember asking my parents about Thanksgiving. And they said, in Judaism, every day is Thanksgiving. And I remember bringing that up with Mother's Day, why my mother made such a fuss about Mother's Day when every day was Mother's Day. And she sort of realized the inconsistency of her logic, but that was one of the things she was proud of. And that didn't get any place. But anyway, the point was, what does it mean, Thanksgiving, one day a year? And what does it mean, the concept of Thanksgiving every day? And then it dawned on me, now bringing it into the Hanukkah context. Hanukkah is definitely a Thanksgiving period to thank God for victories and miracles and the saving of the Jewish people. But take a look at where we acknowledge this in our prayers. We have, besides the lighting of the lights each night, we have also the saying of Hallel every day in the morning, and at every Amidah we have Al Hanisim, for the miracles, as a passage that is added to the Amidah. But now let's take a look as to where it is inserted in the Amidah, in the bracha called Modim. So I'm going to read to you the English. This is from the Koran Siddur. We give thanks to you, for you are Hashem, our God, and God of our ancestors, forever and all time. You are the rock of our lives, shield of our salvation from generation to generation. We will thank you and declare your praise for our lives, which are entrusted into your hand, for our souls, which are placed in your charge, for your miracles, which are with us every day, and for your wonders and favors at all times, evening, morning, and midday. You are good, for your compassion never fails. You are compassionate, for your loving kindness never ceases. We have always placed our hope in you. Now that said, every single day, three times a day, four times on Shabbat, five times on Yom Kippur. If you add to that the repetition of the Amidah, we do it more than that. So that's our Thanksgiving every single day of the year. Because there are things such as life and sustenance and everything in this world which we are duty-bound and hopefully desirous of thanking God for all the time. Comes Hanukkah, same story with Purim, comes Hanukkah, and to this bracha, of which I read the first major part, we add the following, Al HaNisim, we thank you also for the miracles, the redemption, the mighty deeds, the salvations, and the victories in battle, which you performed for our ancestors in those days at this time. And then we get detailed in the time of Matityahu, son of Yochanan, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, the Hasmonean, and his sons, the wicked Greek kingdom, rose up against your people Israel to make them forget your Torah and to force them to transgress the statutes of your will. And it continues. And after we say this whole piece for Hanukkah, we continue with the everyday bracha into which this Hanukkah piece has been inserted. And we say, for all of these things, may your name be blessed and exalted, our King, continually, forever, and all time. And then we have another finishing of the bracha. The point is that every day is Thanksgiving. Hanukkah time is a special focus on Thanksgiving, but within the context of the everyday thank you to God. And same thing with Purim. And, you know, if your mind wanders to other things, you could see this in other areas as well. If the Torah says to remember the Exodus from Egypt all the days of your life, every day and all the days of your life, which it does and which we do, and then it says to say to your child on that specific day, Ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeiti mimitzrayim, by pointing to matzah and to maror, and to focus in the holiday of Pesach and at the Seder table on that which we are commanded to acknowledge God for every single day. The analogy that pops into my mind is to a beautiful ring. A ring made out of white gold or platinum, exquisitely done, and a beautiful, beautiful stone set in the ring. It is not just the stone itself. You can't just stick the stone in with sticky tape onto your finger. It comes set into a ring, and that's how you appreciate the gem. So we have a ring which represents the cycle of the year every single day, and we have a precious stone set into this ring. As far as the Exodus is concerned, that stone is on Pesach. And as far as the miracles of Hanukkah and the victories of Hanukkah, that stone represents the days of Hanukkah. So it is not a crazy notion that we give thanks at specific times and we have it every single day. Getting back to regular Thanksgiving, I mean, meaning secular Thanksgiving or United States Thanksgiving and Canada as well, but on a different date. I was always taught as a child that since that concept of thanking God for a bountiful harvest is definitely within our own cultural background, then it's something that we should go along with and something that we should appreciate, because that's what acknowledgement of God includes. So Thanksgiving, per se, is not something to be shunned, even by the most religious Jews, although there probably are Jews who say, Chukat HaGoyim, this is what non-Jews do. We have our own different ways to do it. And I say that we have always, we are supposed to always, consider ourselves to be members of the human race and a membership in a special subset of the human race known as the Jewish people. And being a Jew comes with certain obligations as well as privileges. And being a human being comes with certain obligations as well, and I guess privileges. So one does not negate the other. And the fact that this was made a big deal, including the nine-year-old boy who invented the menorah, which is a menorah in the shape of a turkey, and my mother, Allah Shalom, who used to make turkey for the Shabbat following Thanksgiving. She felt that to make a fuss about a Thursday with a national holiday, make a fuss there and then have Shabbat meals, any less than that was not the proper thing to do. And every family to its own customs and traditions. Let's not forget the football games that are a tradition of Thanksgiving as well. And that pretty much is the story. I'll add a little bit of a sad note to my comment, and that is that I would much rather Hanukkah be Thanksgiving time than at the end of December, when many Jews in the States start making comparisons and talking about a Hanukkah bush instead of a you-know-what tree and all kind of things, and the giving of presents on each night of Hanukkah is definitely a borrowing from the Christian world in which many of us grew up. So we have to watch out for that. Back on the upside, we could also, I forgot to mention that in every Birkat HaMazon that we have in any meals, and you count them how many you have during Hanukkah, we also have Al Hanisim there, and it's inserted in the bracha called Nodelecha, we thank you. So we acknowledge this. Now, I want to pick on a point here, and maybe I'll do it in the form of one of the many, many answers to the famous Beit Yosef question. The question has been asked over the generations and answered in so many different ways. Slight differences between the answers, sometimes big differences. A simple math question. If the Hashmonaim found a single flask of oil with enough oil to last one day, and they needed 8 days before they could get new oil, and this one-day supply miraculously lasted for 8 days, then technically there are 7 days of miracle. One day it would have lasted without a miracle. And therefore the question is, why do we celebrate 8 days of Hanukkah and not seven? Now, the question is a fun question, as evidenced by the zillion answers that have been given to it. No one was seriously recommending that we have only 7 days of Hanukkah, and I am totally, totally convinced, and I don't remember if I said any of this last week, but I'll try to put it into a review and a perspective again. I am totally convinced that there are very significant reasons to have an 8-day holiday, Dafka, and the fact that there was an 8-day miraculous occurrence of the oil burning sort of pointed us in that direction. But the question is the question. 1-day supply lasts 8 days. You have 7 days of miracle. Why 8? One of the answers that I've always liked very much is the fact that, true, there were 7 days of a supernatural miracle or series of miracles, where oil that should have burned up continued to burn or refill or whatever for 8 days. But there is also a basic miracle within nature, and that's that oil burns in the first place. You take an olive, you press out its oil. It is beautiful to look at. It is nice to put on your salad or dip your challah into or whatever you want to do with it. And you stick a wick in, let the oil soak into the wick and light the end of the wick, and you have a beautiful oil lamp flame. That's a miracle. And if you don't believe me, take a lemon. Squeeze its juice into a cup. Take a wick, stick it in the juice, let it soak up in the wick, and try to light the end of the wick. Oil, in its natural form, is a miracle too. So this one answer suggests that we have one day of nature's miracles and 7 days of supernatural miracles, which equals 8 days of miracles, which corresponds to 8 days of Chanukah. I like that because it reminds us of not taking things for granted in our natural world. Everything is a miracle of creation. And it also fits the wording that I read before when we speak of God's miracles. So you think of Chanukah and you think of this and that. God's miracles that happen every single day. It always reminds me of that Anton Chekhov story, The Bet or The Wager. And that one line, I'm not going to tell you the whole story, I've done it in the past, but this guy writes, what's wrong with human beings is that they would be impressed and amazed if orange trees bore frogs, but they're not impressed that orange trees bear oranges. So much of Judaism is meant to teach us not to take this world for granted. It is so easy to do, but you can't do it. That's our challenge, that in everything that we do, from the bracha that we say coming out of the bathroom after successfully tending to our needs, and on and on and on, it's all meant not to take things for granted. Including that we'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio after a short break if you're listening on the live stream. That was Zehayom, a verse from the Hallel, which we say 8 times on the 8 days of Chanukah and on other special occasions. And it basically states that we acknowledge this day as being formed and shaped by God, and therefore we sing his praise. It's a combination of what I said before of not taking things for granted and of properly expressing our thanks to God for the many things that he does for us. Okay, let's stay with Chanukah. Actually, let me throw in one word about the Parsha. Miketz is 90% of the time, roughly, Shabbos Chanukah. Only 10% it's not, in which case it's the day after. So Miketz definitely belongs to Chanukah. And in my choice and other people's choices of what to talk about, Miketz sort of gets the short end of the stick because Chanukah is the topic of the time. And I've always felt that Miketz is the middle of a story, which we started last week, which we will continue next week, and it gets covered. So it is a little less... It doesn't suffer as much by the focus on Chanukah, because last week we had the beginning of the problem with Yosef and his brothers, and the parsha ended with Yosef languishing in prison. And Miketz begins with Yosef in prison, but shortly thereafter, the wine steward tells Paro, who's been having trouble with dreams, that, now I remember, there was this Jewish kid in prison with me when you got angry and tossed me into the huskel. I didn't really say that. And he did a very good job at interpreting dreams, both favorable for me and not so favorable for the baker. And Paro said, okay, get him here, and the rest is what unfolds in the Parsha about Yosef being taken from the prison and elevated to a very high position in Egypt, being in charge of the preparation for the famine during the 7 years of plenty, and the whole business with the brothers going down. And the end of Miketz, I'm not doing it justice, but the end of Miketz is a cliffhanger ending where situation is set, where Binyamin, Yosef's younger brother, is on the chopping block. And the brothers are in a position that they can abandon the other child of Rachel. Remember, we're talking about the main brothers, the ones who were the sons of Leah, six of them, the ones who were very jealous for their mother, that Rachel was favored, and that fact that Yosef was favored didn't help. And they could have just left Binyamin where he was and walk away, and with good excuse this time. But they didn't, and you'll see in Vayigash how Yehuda stands up for Binyamin and how Yosef breaks down as a result. The fact of the matter is, the entire Parsha of Miketz is one single long, the longest in the Torah, portion, Parsha. It starts with a little white space before it. It ends with a white space after it. And the entire Sedra is 146 psukim long of a single Parsha. A single Parsha means a single topic, means not a whole bunch of things are happening. One major thing is happening, and we're getting the full details of it, which is the story of Yosef and his brothers. Okay, with that said, I'll add one more thing, and that is that the regular, rare, 10% of the time, Haftorah of Miketz is the story with Shlomo HaMelech and the babies, and his suggestion of cutting the baby in half. And that's considered to be some kind of analogy to the kingdom that was about to be split after Shlomo's reign. And it's not a good thing to split a baby in half, and it's not a good thing for the Jewish people to be split in that form, in that way as well, of two kingdoms. So, back to Chanukah. My thing this year, I wrote about it, I spoke about it, I'm speaking about it this Shabbos, in some variation or another. I keep adding and changing because I don't like to say exactly the same things over and over again, and I find myself polishing it more and more, is a different angle to the question, why eight? Not like the Beit Yosef's question, if there were 7 days of miracle, why do we have 8 days of Hanukkah? No, I accept that there were 8 days of miracle, and I still question why there are 8 days of Hanukkah, because we don't have a rule for the creating of a new holiday that says pick a length of time in the story, and that's how long the holiday has to be. Ain't no such thing. Even in recent times, when we made a modern holiday called Yom Yerushalayim, it was not a six-day holiday to correspond to the 6 days of the miraculous war, of the Six-Day War in 67. There was no rule like that. And Esther asked that the people in Shushan fast for her for 3 days, make a three-day holiday. And there were 10 sons of Haman. We'd make a 10-day holiday. There was no rule. Just because a one-day supply of oil lasted 8 days, so we have 8 days. It might have been a one-day supply of oil lasted 8 days, so we light 8 lights on the one day of Hanukkah. But that was not to be, and that wasn't from the beginning. Hanukkah was always an 8-day holiday. And my thing this year for myself, and for those to whom I speak, is to build up the meaning to why our sages declared an 8-day holiday, specifically an 8-day holiday. And not only why they did an 8-day holiday, but why they built in later generations, accounting to the 8. Famous dispute between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, where Beit Hillel, whom we follow, said that we light one candle on the first night and two on the second night and three and four and five and six and seven and eight. Now, the result of counting is a focus and an emphasis on that number eight. The original rule was to light a lamp, a candle, on each night of Hanukkah. For how long? For 8 days. It gives you a different kind of thing. It gives you one. Here's another one. Another one, another one, another one, another one. We finished? No, another one, too many, another one. But does not give you, it's when the 8 days finished, we say, stop, don't do it anymore. But it doesn't give you that focus on eight that Beit Shammai and even Beit Hillel and even Beit Shammai gave, where Beit Shammai said you count back 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and he had his reasons. Maybe we'll get to it, maybe we won't. But the fact of the matter is that the way we light candles today, one the first night, two the second night, eight the eighth night, and the fact that we light, most of us, in a Chanukiah, and the fact that when you light one candle there, there are eight holes that are waiting, seven more holes that are waiting, a total of eight. So the physical presence of the Chanukiah is a reminder of eight on every day of Hanukkah. So the question is, what's so special about eight? It's got to be, in my opinion, more than just a one-day supply of oil lasted 8 days. Too simple, too simplified, too simplistic, better word, because it took 8 days for practical reasons, either purifying from ritual impurity to a dead body, and or that's how long the supply took to make elsewhere and transport to Yerushalayim. I heard all kind of different things as I was growing up. Doesn't seem significant enough by itself to make a holiday for 8 days, but there are things that do. Now, I apologize. I didn't listen to last week's show. I know I spoke about Hanukkah, and I don't know how many of these things that I said then. And I wrote this in the lead tidbit, but I'm always restricted in the lead tidbit even more so than I am on Torah Tidbits Audio, although that's restricted also. What I would love sometimes is to have a group of people listening to me for an unspecified amount of time, and I can drain everything and say everything that I want to. Not really. Anyway, I'll pretend that I didn't mention any of these things, and I'm putting it all together here now. There's a Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, the laws of the tractate in the Talmud that deals with idolatry. that says, Adam HaRishon, we're going under the opinion that he was created in the fall on our Rosh Hashanah time, and he experienced day after day that the days were growing shorter and the nighttime was growing longer. He felt that perhaps he was the one at fault for the world continuing to darken. Remember, he had no experience about the cycle of the sky, of the heavens, and therefore his assumption was, if it's less light and more dark today than it was yesterday, then it'll be even less tomorrow, and it'll be even less the day after. And he erroneously concluded that the world was being returned to its chaotic and dark state before the days of creation. And he felt that he was responsible for that because he had violated God's one law that he gave him, not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, because on the day that you eat from it, you will die. Now, he didn't die on the very day that he ate from it, but if this was the slow death that God had in store for him, with the light diminishing every single day until it would be perpetual darkness, then he felt that it was his fault. And, says the Gemara, he declared an 8-day period of fasting and prayer. Lo and behold, came the winter solstice, and after that, the days began to lengthen. And he said, hey, this is cool. It's not destroying and going back to total darkness. It's the way the world works. And he celebrated with an 8-day holiday. That's what the Gemara tells us. Midwinter, dark period of time, but already seeing that the days are getting longer, and a celebration of light in the middle of the winter for 8 days. Sound familiar? Not yet. The Talmud continues that Adam HaRishon's act was l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, and subsequent generations perverted this midwinter holiday, which they perpetuated, perverted it to pagan worship. And based on that pagan holiday midwinter, Christmas came about for the Christians, and that's how the Gemara concludes the piece. Adam HaRishon did it l'shem shamayim. Subsequent generations perverted it for idolatry. Now, what the Gemara doesn't say, but I believe it's the dots we're supposed to connect, is that many, many years since creation, after creation, and many, many years ago, there was a different set of miracles that occurred to the Jewish people in the land of Israel at Hanukkah time, and an 8-day festival of light was established. Could be, my suggestion, not just mine, that this is the restoration of the holiday that Adam HaRishon initiated that had been perverted for centuries, and the Jewish people are setting it back up the way it should be as a way of acknowledging God. That's originally what Adam HaRishon did, and that's what we have done with Hanukkah. Now, the Gemara does not say that Hanukkah is based on that original Adam holiday, but I believe it's a place to start to already show the significance of an 8-day festival of light that dispels darkness. More, the darkness is based on the beginning account in creation. After the verse of Bereshit bara Elokim, in the beginning God created, the Torah says, V'ha'aretz, and the world, hayata tov avohu, was chaos and void, v'choshech al pnei tahom, and darkness covered the depths. Darkness is an analogy to Greek culture. Exactly why we call it that, because their attempt to darken the light of Torah in our eyes. So it's a very, very appropriate starting point for 8. But it continues. The Hashmonaim rededicated the Beit HaMikdash, which was in ruin and defilement, and they cleaned it up, straightened it up, and got it working again. Rededication means there was a dedication in the first place. Now, the original dedication, we're not talking about that of the Second Temple, which the Hashmonaim were functioning in. We're not talking about the first temple built by Shlomo HaMelech. We are talking about the original first Mikdash, known as a Mishkan, Tabernacles, that was instituted at God's command by Moshe Rabbeinu in an 8-day process. There were 7 days of special inaugural korbanot. The Kohanim were sequestered in the Mishkan, and they did what they did for those 7 days. The 8th day was the day of completing the consecration of the Mishkan, and that means that Chanukah, dedication of the Mikdash in the first place, was an 8-day process, and that's what our sages did with Chanukah. So it could be that that's what they were matching it to. Then you've got many, many connections between Chanukah and Sukkot, the rabbinic holiday of Chanukah, the biblical holiday of Sukkot. 8 days, 8 days. Full Hallel on all 8 days. Full Hallel on all 8 days. Many more things, some cute little things. For example, schach, the covering of a sukkah, cannot be more than 20 amot, 20 cubits high. And a chanukiah cannot be displayed higher than 20 cubits. The same reason is given, that the eye does not go up that high. And therefore, you would be sitting in a sukkah without being conscious of the covering, which is the key part of the mitzvah. Chanukah candles have a major element of the essence of the mitzvah, is the publicizing of the miracle. And people do not look up that high, higher than 20 amot. A whole bunch of other things, including the statement in the Book of Maccabees that in the year of Chanukah, certain things were done at Chanukah time that should have been done back at Sukkot, but we were still under Greek oppression then, and we couldn't do them, and they sort of had like a surrogate Sukkot holiday when they were finally free of the Greeks. So there are significant parallels between Sukkot and Chanukah. My favorite, by the way, is what we say in Al Hanisim, Vehidliku Neirot B'chatzrot Kodshecha, that they kindled candles or lamps in your holy courtyard. And that's a famous comment because the fact of the matter is the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash was not in the courtyard. It was inside the Heichal, and it was not ever brought outside. And some want to suggest that in this moment when they wanted to make as public a display of the victory and the miracles as possible, they actually brought the menorah outside. But the other possibility is that they left the menorah inside where it belongs, and they lit lamps in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash to serve as a beacon to announce to all who that upon whom that light shone, that it was something that we are able to celebrate. And what's fascinating is there is one other occasion that we know that lamps were lit in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. Guess when? Sukkot. Part of the description of Simchat Beit HaShoeva, the celebrations of the water drawing in preparation for drawing. In preparation, my Brooklyn accent gets in the way sometimes there, in celebration of the Kohen's following morning bringing of water of libation, there the description is of lamps that were kindled in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. Another parallel between Chanukah and Sukkot. I am quickly running out of time for my favorite, and that's Brit Milah. Brit Milah, short, is the one item that the Greeks banned from Jewish practice, not only because they wanted to strip us away from Torah and Torah away from us, but because they had an actual problem with circumcision. They felt that it was a mutilation of the body. The body is beautiful. Look at their sculpture. Look at their art. Look at their sport. Look at their whole culture. And therefore, it was an abomination to them. Shabbat, Torah learning, the calendar, those are not abominations. Those are strategic decisions to tear us away from the Torah. But Brit Milah was a target, a special target, and therefore it became a special feature of our celebration, of our being saved from Greek oppression and free to keep the Torah by Brit Milah 8 days. The holiday is 8 days also. It's like a stick it in your face to the Yevanim. On that note, I wish you Chanukah Sameach and Shabbat Shalom. We bench Rosh Chodesh Tevet this week, and that's about all the time for today. L'hishtameach.